for our lives. The subject that has been assigned to me tonight is found in Matthew 18. You can turn there. Whoso offendeth one of these little ones. And as you turn here and recognize the setting, you'll realize that this is the words of Jesus as he was here on the earth and his earthly ministry. There's many times that Jesus related to children. He told people, the disciples, suffer the little children to come unto me and forbid them not. Jesus had a passion for little ones, and we do also. We're thankful for the gift of our children. They're a wonderful gift from God, and we have a great responsibility and a great obligation to them. We all know that and understand that. So this is a serious subject tonight. It's been a challenge to my life as I studied into this, as I'm with you in the midst of raising a family, endeavoring to do it by the grace of God. And so we want to look at this subject tonight and see what the Lord has for us. I don't stand up here and pretend to have all the answers tonight or be a perfect example, but I see my own needs and my own weaknesses. If we turn to Matthew 18, let's just read the first six verses to get a little bit of the setting. At that same time came the disciples unto Jesus, saying, Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And Jesus called a little child unto him and set him in the midst of them and said, Verily I say unto you, except ye be converted and become as little children, ye shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Whosoever therefore shall humble himself as this little child, the same is greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoso shall receive one such little child in my name receiveth me. But whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and that he were drowned in the depths of the sea. This word offend, what are we speaking about when we talk about offending a little one? I looked the word offendeth up in the dictionary and it brought out the, gave several definitions. Offendeth means to drawing them to sin, to cause dissemble, to discourage, to make angry, to make a prey, to grieve the righteous soul. And tonight we'll notice there's various ways that we can do this as we think of the little ones among us, our children. Who is he speaking of when he speaks of the little ones? Here in verse 6 he says about these little ones which believe in me. I believe it's speaking about children, but I believe it's also speaking of those who are young in the faith, those who have believed in Jesus, those that are beginning the Christian life. I would just like to notice from these few verses that I just read how Jesus' special attention to the little ones. Here in these verses, Jesus used children as an object lesson to teach the qualities or attributes of those who are that are God's children. He says in verse 3 that we need to become as little children, be converted and become as little children. Well, how are little children tonight? As you think of little children, they're very trusting. They trust their parents, and of course that trust is built as you build a relationship with them. If you're a mother or father tonight, or a grandma and grandpa, you know how you can take that little child in your arms and they are totally trusting you. You can probably throw them up in the air and catch them, and they laugh and they're happy because there's a trust built there. We also realize tonight that that trust can be broken down. And it can be done various ways, and we'll look at that a little later. Little children are very trusting. They also are very innocent. Little children easily forgive and forget. They have a short memory. Sometimes, as parents, we wish that our memory would be a little longer. We say we have a short memory, and it's a negative thing in our life. But for little children, that short memory, easy to forgive, is a real blessing. It's part of their innocence. They don't hold grudges. They are soon ready to forgive and to forget. And they are happy and at peace. Also, little children, they are humble. Thinking about the attributes of little children, they enjoy life in their own little world. Life is simple. They're not proud and arrogant. What empires have they built? They're just Everything is simple in a child's life. You observe a child as they play and as they go about. Life is very, maybe sometimes we as adults wish that life would be that simple for us. They don't have the stress and the responsibilities. Life is just about the moment-to-moment activities that they're involved in. They're not thinking about the future too much. They're not worried about what happened yesterday. Life is simple and they're humble. Jesus said in verse 5, "Whoso receiveth such a little child, whosoever welcomes such a little child in my name receiveth me." Here we see Jesus sets the standard of Christianity. One of the standards of Christianity is as we receive and welcome these little children, we are proving whether we are one of God's children ourselves. We are proving our Christianity. 1 John talks about this. He talks about in 1 John 3, verse 9, "Whosoever is born of God does not commit sin." And there's many verses that talk about he that loveth his brother abideth in the light. And we make that connection that if we are a child of God, we will not sin. We will not cause our children to sin. And we realize that we live in the flesh and sometimes we make mistakes and we need to ask God for forgiveness. We need to ask our children for forgiveness if that needs to be. Well, what value does Jesus place on children anyways? You can turn with me. I'd like to go back to Psalms 127 for a few verses. Psalms 127 verses 3 to 5. What value does Jesus place on children? Psalm 127, verse 3. "Lo, children are a heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate." Just a few verses here, but the psalmist gives us quite a few windows into how God views children. First of all, I see in verse 3, they are a heritage and a reward. We talk a lot about our godly heritage. I think we understand that when we talk about godly heritage, we're talking about our godly upbringing, what your parents taught you when you were a child, the values that they taught you, the word of God that they taught you. And they hand that to you, and that is a Christian heritage, and you are responsible to pass that on to your children, to the next generation. It's a gift. It's like an inheritance. It's something you did not earn. It's something that was given to you. Well, children are a heritage tonight. They were given to us by the Lord. They are not our own. But they have been given to us, and we are like stewards to teach them and to bring them up that they would also embrace the faith and to love God and be his children. And then pass that on to their children as time would remain. Well, children are a heritage. They're also a reward. When you think of a reward, you think of something that is giving, something that you receive as a gift. Something favorable given or received in return for something. In school, they have rewards sometimes. If the children get a certain grade or if they accomplish a certain, have a certain accomplishment, they receive a reward. Children are a reward as God gives them to us. It says here they are the reward of the fruit of the womb is his reward. It's a reward of those who have taken that step of marriage, and God sees fit to bless the marriage with children. Secondly, I see that here in verse 4, the children are as arrows in the hand of a mighty man. When you think of a mighty man with a bow and arrow, you think of somebody with some assets. You think of someone with some potential. And children are given to us, and they are intended to be assets in our life. In our homes, our children are to be assets. That's what God intends. Not to be a burden or liability. We see that so much around us that the world focuses on children as a liability and as a burden. It's not the way God intended. God intended that children would be an asset in our homes, to our lives, to our families. When you stop to think of your personal resources, what do you think of your children? Do you count them when you think of your assets? Certainly they are. God has entrusted them into our care. Thirdly, thinking about how God views children. From verse 5, I see that they are given to bring joy and fulfillment in life. Now imagine tonight, if you have a family, how it would be to live without any children. Just think how quiet the house would be, maybe how lonely you would become. Sometimes God chooses that for our life. But if you have children tonight, and you maybe become weary sometimes with the responsibility, with the teaching, with the energy it takes, with the commitment, the sacrifice, think about how it would be if we would not have any children. He says here in verse 5, happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed. God intends for children to bring joy and happiness into our homes. That's how God views children. Sometimes, I know for myself, we get busy with life, the responsibilities of life, and sometimes I don't take the time to be joyful with my children like I should, just to enjoy the interest that they have, just to go out and play a game of ball or throw ball, just to go out and enjoy life with them. I think it's important that we do that as fathers and mothers, that we take time with our children to enjoy, to be joyful with them, enjoy life with them. Galatians 6:9 says, and let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. Thinking of our responsibilities as fathers and mothers, let's not become weary in the responsibility of raising a family. Surely God will reward us if we are faithful in this. Fourthly, God's view of children, they are given for the blessing of future generations. I see that here in the end of verse 5. He says, but they shall speak with enemies in the gate. Now, we don't relate to that like they did back in the Old Testament, but the cities would have a wall around it, and then there would be a gate. And important people, if you read different accounts, important people would sit at the gate and meet, would be the ones to meet the travelers coming through the area. Or if there was some kind of negotiating that needed to be done with an enemy, those at the gate would meet the people coming to visit, the people coming to talk. And it says here in this verse that our children will speak with the enemies in the gate. As I try to apply that to us tonight, I believe that God has a purpose and a plan for each individual that He brings into this world. Each of our children He has a plan for. And I don't know what His plan is for each individual, but I know that He has a plan for them, and He has a plan in His kingdom. He would have each child to be a son or daughter of God, to be useful in His kingdom. Well, in getting now more to the message tonight, how can we cause one of these little ones to sin? I have several points that I thought of, and I'm sure this isn't all-inclusive. But just like to think a few. The number one thing I have is lukewarm Christianity. In Revelations, we have the Laodicean church. And the Bible says that they were lukewarm. They weren't hot or cold. They had just cooled off spiritually. They had become, we could say, complacent. They had a form, but they were dead spiritually. And today, I believe it's a possibility for us to be religious, but not really be on fire for the Lord like He would have us to be. We go through the forms. I believe it's possible to be very traditional in practice, to go through the mechanics of worship every Sunday and yet be dead or dying spiritually. And God forbid that that would be among us. It's a very sobering thing for each one of us to take inventory of our life and keep our spiritual life up to date and keep it alive. But I have to think tonight, thinking of offending, of turning these young ones away from the faith, what are some ways, possibilities that could turn them away? As I think of lukewarm Christianity, I think of the possibility of a father or mother that just goes through the routines of worship and is not really spiritually alive. And as a young person, as a child observes that, they realize that mom and dad are just in a church life is just more or less a have-to-do mode. We have to do this and we have to do that. And we have to go to church Sunday because it's time to go to church. And the children look on and they just look at mom and dad's faith and they say it's just pretty dried up. It's not very attractive. But oh yeah, on Monday morning, when Monday morning rolls around, Dad's all excited about going to work and business, and he gets all wrapped up in his work and his business, and he doesn't have time to spend with his family, but he has some time he would like to take time with the family. But life is so busy and involvements are so demanding. And so the children grow up in this environment, and they evaluate Mom and Dad's faith, and they look at the exciting, stimulating world out there. And all too many times, I'm afraid to say that the world wins out. The children go off to the world because Mom and Dad's faith isn't attractive. Secondly, tonight, could it be we could offend one of these little ones through scars of abuse? And we know that the world is full of abuse, and I trust that this too is not named among us. Just want to look at it a little bit tonight. I believe there's the possibility that we could be guilty of this in one form or another. The world around us is full of physical abuse. And I don't have to tell you tonight, if you go to the grocery store and you observe a young mother that is frustrated with her children and she is yelling at her children, and the children don't even seem to faze them. They're used to that verbal abuse, just ugly words. We believe tonight that the Bible tells us to train up a child, and to train up a child involves discipline. It involves physical discipline. But have you ever disciplined your child in anger? That's a question I had to ask myself tonight, and I'm sure most of us would have to hang our heads and say, we have done that. We have allowed our emotions to get involved, and we did not stop and just let our emotions in check first. You see, deep emotional wounds follow the child who has experienced abuse in their childhood or youthful years. More than that, when we abuse our children through physical, verbal abuse, there's some things that happen. One of those things is the definition of love is twisted. You see, our children look to their parents to be that source of love. And when we are not true to that, that trust that I talked about, when we let our children down and that trust that was there is destroyed, then their definition of love is twisted. Number two, I believe also when there's abuse involved, the roles of father and mother get distorted. You see, as a father or a mother tonight, we are to be, especially fathers, I would say, we are the authority figure for the child that represents God to them. And so if we abuse the child, our children tonight, we are distorting their view of God, because now God must be like a dictator. God must be someone who's looking down and is holding a big stick just ready to strike them down. You see how that affects our children. They get that view of God. It is very difficult for a child to come to God of grace and mercy if he views him as a tyrant. I believe tonight any form of abuse unrepented of will breed a spirit of bitterness and anger in these little ones. And God forbid that we would do that. And many will grow up to be hateful, rebellious, and defiant. Is it possible for them to find Christ as all sufficient? Yes, I believe it is. It's possible for anyone to find Christ, but I believe it will be a difficult journey for them to break through the emotional barriers that are built up in those kind of situations. I would just simply say tonight, if you are a person that has experienced any kind of abuse in your life as a child, or if you are a parent that has been guilty of this, there's freedom from this. The Bible says, come unto me, all ye that are weary and heavy laden, and those who have experienced difficult things, and I will give you rest. I also think of the verses in Matthew 19. It talks about everyone that has, Jesus speaking, those that have forsaken homes and father and mother and wife or children or lands for my name's sake shall receive 100-fold and shall inherit everlasting life. What am I saying? I'm saying tonight, if you come from maybe, let's say, a bad home life or parents that didn't love the Lord, Jesus said those who are willing to step out of that kind of an environment and serve the Lord, and they will receive 100-fold. There will be a reward for them, and they shall inherit everlasting life. So there is definitely hope for those who have been on this difficult journey. I believe it's important tonight, if we have been guilty as parents and maybe just in verbal abuse, that we would ask our children for forgiveness and to to make that right. In the third area, I believe we also can offend one of these little ones by provoking them to anger. Colossians 3 verse 21 says, "Fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged." And also Ephesians 6 verse 4 says, "And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." How can we provoke our children to wrath or anger? I think there's several ways that are possible that we can do this as parents. Maybe, possibly the greatest cause of provoking to anger is simply neglecting to teach and to train. And that falls back on us. You know, we recognize undesirable traits in our children, but what do we do to teach them? What do we do to curb that carnal nature? You know, you might observe a young parent that is frustrated with his child at the store, and they're using verbal abuse because they're frustrated with the child's behavior. But only if we could help that parent understand, if they would teach the child and give them direction in their life, that they could avoid that scenario, they could avoid that confrontation, they could avoid that frustration. So then they're very frustrated with the behavior of the child. So then they start to use verbal abuse. They use warnings. They use threats. And that only makes things worse. The child becomes frustrated and angry at his parents. I think another thing that we have to be careful of as parents is not to rule by reaction. Reaction. It's so easy for us to react. The child's disobeying or being naughty, so we react and reactions are not good. I think it's much better tonight if we as parents give clear teaching and direction, and then we maintain those perimeters with fair discipline. We make it very clear to the children where the lines are. And it's a big task. It is. As parents, there's so many areas that we need to teach and to make it clear where the lines are. And we need to be patient and we need to be long-suffering sometimes. But yet I think we need to be firm in the end that this is where we have drawn the line and this is what we expect. And if it requires discipline, then we need to take the courage to do so. How else can we provoke our children to anger? The second area I have is by inconsistency. Inconsistency. Consistency is a beautiful thing in our lives if we can attain unto it. And the Lord can help us with that. We need to strive for consistency. But inconsistency makes our children frustrated and maybe bitter. How are some areas that we can be inconsistent? I thought of a few. Number one, inconsistency in discipline and giving privileges. I say tonight we need to be careful we don't allow our different moods or stress levels to affect the way that we discipline or the failure to discipline. And what is wrong if our children would say, "Watch out, dad or mom's in a bad mood. Just stay clear." Let's check our emotions. Or for no unexplained reason, one time we come down hard on a certain area and the next time we just let them slip by. Inconsistent in our discipline. And I know where the rubber meets the road. It's a challenge because sometimes, depending how we are feeling, maybe if we had a hard day and we just feel like maybe we're tired and maybe we become rash and maybe we become a little reactionary. Let's try to be consistent in our discipline and what we expect. Number two, we can be inconsistent by saying and doing two different things. If our attitude is "do as I say and not as I do," no, we are not perfect. But when we tolerate sin in our life or inconsistencies in our own life and yet expect more of our children, it will likely offend them. Because how can you expect your child to do something if you're not willing to do it yourself? How can you expect a higher standard of them when we allow some little pet sin in our own life? Let's be careful about that. Thirdly, we can do this by expecting more out of them than ourselves. And this could be true in many areas of life. I had to think tonight of the area of our work. And as I was studying for this, I thought of a family that I knew as I was a teenager. I used to get to their farm occasionally. And it was just interesting to observe. Dad was never home. Dad was running off to sales and wherever he wanted to, whatever his interests were. And the boys were home doing the milking and doing the work. And if you come around, usually Dad was gone and the boys were working. I don't like to use the word slaving away, but they were working hard to get the work done. If we live that kind of lifestyle, as fathers, we expect our children, our boys, to do more than what we're willing to jump in and do ourselves, and we could cause them to be offended. And I'm glad to say tonight, in that case, the boys turned out well, and I think it was because of their mother that was a godly, caring mother, to expect more of our children. And that could be in many areas of life. Another way I believe that we could offend our little ones is by ruling them with a spirit of law instead of grace. And I believe this could be a whole message. We know that the Old Testament was a dispensation of the law. We had the law, and this is what you do and do not. Thou shalt do and thou shalt not do. And today we live in the spirit of grace, and there's a lot of things that we appreciate about that. It's a whole different way of administrating. And I think, as I think of our homes tonight, I would have a desire that we would administrate as parents with a spirit of grace instead of a spirit of law. And this has been a challenge to me, and I've picked up on some of these thoughts in a book I was reading. And what I have to share here tonight is not original with me, but I do endorse it, and I think it's the way that it should be in our homes. Just notice with me some of the contrast between the spirit of law and the spirit of grace. The spirit of law condemns. This is like relating to our children now. The spirit of law condemns. It makes them feel, it brings a feeling of judgment upon them. The spirit of grace convicts. It allows the spirit to work through the conscience. In other words, the spirit of grace will teach the word of God and teach godly principles and allow God's spirit to work and the conscience to work. The spirit of law discourages, it disheartens. The spirit of grace encourages. It fills the heart with desire. It gives the child a desire to do what's right instead of disheartening and putting down. The spirit of law is never good enough. It demands more. The spirit of grace blesses each new step, encourages a desire to obey, gives compliments. You see the difference? It nurtures along. It encourages instead of demanding more and saying that you're never quite good enough. You just need to attain. You cannot attain. The spirit of the law curses. It leaves children feeling forsaken. Spirit of grace blesses by inspiring, motivating, and strengthening our children to do what's right. The spirit of law criticizes, always finds fault. It's negative. The spirit of grace gives the benefit of the doubt. The spirit of law exposes sin and remembers it. The spirit of grace forgives and forgets. The spirit of law is performance-oriented. The spirit of grace is relationship-oriented. With the performance-oriented, the child is never sure if their performance is good enough. With relationship, they feel loved even when they're disciplined, even when they know that they have done wrong, they feel loved. Like I said, that's not original with me, but I think if we can administrate to our children out of a spirit of grace, encouraging and nurturing, instead of always putting down and making them feel like they cannot quite attain, it will go a long ways to help our children to turn out right. Don't get me wrong. I don't believe tonight that we need law. We need rules. We need perimeters. But we need to administrate out a spirit of grace. And I think you understand what I'm saying tonight. We need to do it out of love. Another way I believe we could offend our young ones, our little ones, is expecting a higher standard of our children than what our church requires or even promotes. And I believe tonight that there's room for diversity of application and conviction in our congregations, in our homes. There'll be that. We'll have diversity. Not every family will administrate or draw the line at the same place, and that's okay. But I've seen a situation where growing up in my growing up years, there was a family that a father that was very strict, and I seen some of the fruits of that. As his young boys grew up and he required them to wear a black hat when I don't think any of the other young boys wore black hats in our church. And I remember walking out the back door after church Sunday mornings as a boy. And I remember their negative comments. I remember them throwing the hats on the ground, on the floor, and stepping on them and talking ugly about it. And their attitudes toward their father. And I had to think of that as I was studying. You know, if we require something of our children that puts them on a different level or makes them feel uncomfortable in the setting that we are, I think it is setting up a case for offense and setting up a case where we could turn them away from the faith. And I'm not saying that's a problem among us, but I think it's something to think about. Fourthly, another way that we can offend our little ones is by failing to provide the needed protection from worldly influences. As parents, we should feel responsible to give our children the accountability that they need. And I hope tonight that we are awake and alert to the possible threats that could damn their eternal souls. We live in a wicked, wicked world. I don't have to tell you that tonight. But as fathers and mothers, we are responsible for our young ones. And I don't believe there's any amount of filters and guidelines that we can give that will just keep them safe and be foolproof. But I think in these day and age that we live, I think it's going to take sitting down and talking with our young people. It takes communication, open communication. It takes times when parents sit their youth down and say, how's it going? How's it going spiritually? Are you finding victory in your Christian life? Are you struggling in any areas? And I think we need to be sensitive to that. I think we understand tonight, as little children, we relate to them on a different platform than what we relate to young people and youth. When children are little, we give direction, we expect obedience, and there's little explaining and not much discussion. It's just pretty much, this is the way it is, this is what we expect. But I believe as our children mature, and they begin to think for themselves, and they have questions. And I think then it's time that we as parents sit down and talk with them and explain why we do what we do. We explain to them why we are concerned about the internet and their cell phones. Because there's dangers there. And I think it's okay for our young people to ask questions. And we as parents need to find answers and try to walk them through this time. I'm talking about offending little ones. Tonight, if we don't take any concern and say, well, they can figure it out, they will figure it out, and it might not be to their own good. Well, in the third part of the message, I would like to think a little bit about the warning that Jesus gives about temptation here in Matthew 18, going back to Matthew 18 again, talking about offenses. Matthew 18, I stopped in verse 6. Let's read verse 7 to 10. Woe unto the world because of offenses. For it must needs be that offenses come, but woe to the man by whom the offense cometh. Wherefore, if thy hand or thy foot offend thee, cut them off and cast them from thee. It is better for thee to enter into life halt or maimed, rather than having two hands or two feet to be cast into everlasting fire. And if thine eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee. It is better for thee to enter into life with one eye, rather than having two eyes to be cast into hell fire. Take heed that ye despise not one of these little ones, for I say unto you that in heaven their angels do always behold the face of my Father which is in heaven. Here in these verses, Jesus gives a little more teaching about offenses. He says here that offenses will come. Offenses will come, temptations will come. He says, Woe to the world because of things that cause people to sin. That's the NIV version of that verse. Woe to the world because of things that cause people to sin. What is Jesus teaching in these verses? First of all, we know that we live in a fallen world. Temptations will come. Satan, the mastermind deceiver, orchestrates temptations to make us fall. And he uses people and he uses circumstances and things around us to lure us, to make us to fall. We understand that. Secondly, Jesus is teaching that we need to remove any and all stumbling blocks of offense. We see in verse 8, this is a very serious matter. It involves eternity. He says it would be better for thee to enter into life halt or maimed rather than having two hands and two feet to be cast into everlasting fire. Jesus was saying it would be better to lose some of your physical members of your body, than to have your whole body cast into hell because those members were the source of offense. What is Jesus saying? Is Jesus teaching a radical approach to temptations? I believe he is. Is he teaching that we should dismember our bodies if they offend us? No, I don't believe Jesus is teaching for us to cut our arms and legs off. But what he is saying is that we need to do whatever it takes to avoid the temptation. Eternity is too long to gamble our souls away with these things around us. We need to take it seriously. Note in verse 10, he says, in his foreknowledge and love, God has assigned an angel, a personal protector, to watch over these little ones. Did you notice that as we read verse 10? It says, take heed that you despise not one of these little ones, talking about these little children. For I say unto you that in heaven their angels do always behold the face of my Father which is in heaven. It seems to me that each child has a personal angel that is beholding the face of the Father, beholding the face of God. If God has that much interest in each of these young children, shouldn't we as parents, as guardians, be very concerned and do all we can to keep them from being offended, to protect them? That's what the angels are doing for them. Let's go on and read verses 11 to 14. For the Son of Man is come to save that which is lost. How think ye, if a man have 100 sheep, and one of them be gone astray, doth not he leave the 99, and goeth into the mountains, and seeketh that one which is gone astray? And if so be that he find it, verily I say unto you, he rejoiceth more of that sheep than of the 99 which went not astray. Even so, it is not the will of your Father which is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish. Here we see the value of one soul. How foolish it would be for us to say, well, the rest of the family is in the church, they're in the sheepfold. We'll just let that rebellious child go. After all, they have taken their own way. We'll just let them learn the hard way. They can find their way back if they choose. We see Jesus' concern over one lost soul, one sheep that has gone astray in the wilderness. How much value do we place on one of these little ones? How much are we willing to sacrifice to find a lost lamb? Is it more important to us than anything else in the world tonight? If one of our children would go astray, or if one of these young ones, someone from the sheepfold. Remember, we're talking about eternal souls. In conclusion, the title says, whoso offendeth one of these little ones. The rest of that verse says, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and he was drowned in the depth of the sea. How severe judgment is pronounced. We see God's view of this, of offending a little one. And how severe judgment he pronounces on one that would do this. May God help us. May he give us wisdom that we would never cause one of these little ones to stumble, to turn away from the truth, or cause them to sin, or limit their ability to trust God. I would like to just go back to Psalms 127. I read verse 3 to 5. I'd like to read verse 1 and 2. Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early and to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he giveth his beloved sleep. Two things I notice in these verses, thinking about the responsibility we have of raising a family and not offending these little ones. In verse 1, what is he saying? I believe he's saying that to have success in our homes, we need to let God be in control and we need to cooperate with him. Except the Lord build the house. I think he's talking about our homes, our families. We labor in vain. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain. We need to commit our families, our little ones to the Lord. In verse 2 here, he said, it is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he giveth his beloved sleep. I would like to relate that to, as we have this responsibility of raising our families for the Lord, we need to, after we have done all that we can do, we need to commit our children and our little ones into his good hands. I think what he is saying here, it's vain for us to sit up and worry and to fret. But I think we need to come to the Lord in prayer and just commit the situation to him. And then he will give us rest. He will give us peace. Tonight, if we have been the source or the object of offense, deliverance is available. I said that before. We can find peace with God. I would like to look at 2 Corinthians 5, verse 10. When we think about this great responsibility, we know that someday we will all stand before God and we have to give an account of our life. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 10 says, "For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that everyone may receive the things done in his body according to that he hath done, whether it be good or bad." Finally, I believe when we stand before God, there'll be no excuses. I don't believe we'll be able to stand there and say, "God, my parents, my father, my mother, they offended me when I was a little one." I believe God's concerned about that, but I don't believe he will accept that as an excuse. I think finally we'll have to find victory over that. We'll have to find deliverance. And as parents, if we have sinned in any way, we need to find deliverance from that, because we will give an account, I believe, in the way that we have done, the way we have been faithful to our families. May God help each one of us, young and old, to make right choices today and each day, that someday soon, we can all meet him in peace without the loss of one. May God bless.